Welcome to The Deal with Animals. I'm Marika Bell, answer zoologist, CPDT certified dog trainer, and an animal myself. This is a podcast about the connection and interaction between humans and other animals.
I love this question. What's the deal with animals?
What do I think is the deal with animals? I think the deal with animals, I think is they're awesome.
So what do you think is the deal with animals?
Today, I'm talking with Nora Livingstone, the CEO and co-founder of Animal Experience International, an award-winning B Corp that helps people volunteer on animal welfare and conservation projects. She's also hosting the first panel at the 2023 Emerging Voices for Animals in Tourism Conference starting on March 8th. In this episode, we're going to discuss her amazing work sending much-needed volunteers on eco-tour vacations in a way that is ethical and beneficial for the animals, science, and local communities. We will also discuss the 2023 EVAC conference and what she's excited to learn there. And now, a shout-out this week goes to all of my listeners and, in fact, all of the people affected by the earthquake on February 6th, 2023 in Turkey and Syria. My heart goes out to all of you and a donation as well. If others also feel moved to make a donation to the relief effort, go to redcross.org or to directrelief.org. For links to these, check out the show notes wherever you're listening to your podcast. Hello, welcome to The Deal with Animals. Will you please introduce yourself and share your pronouns?
Hi, thanks for having me. My name is Nora Livingstone. I am the CEO and founder of Animal Experience International, and I also do some work with Fanimal that we'll talk about, and I am she, her.
Thank you very much. And yeah, let's start with what this upcoming conference that Fanimal is a big part of called the Emerging Voices of Animals in Tourism, or For Animals in Tourism, sorry. The Emerging Voices for Animals and Tourism Conference. And what is your part in all of this? What is your interest?
Well, I have a great interest in animals and tourism because Animal Experience International, my B Corp, is the whole thing that we do is we get people to volunteer with animals. And we started in 2011. I have a degree from a small university in Canada that has nothing to do with animals. It's anthropology and environmental studies. And my business partner is a veterinarian. So when we first got into this field, we were just making it up. We were just reading about ethics with people volunteering animals and going along with what way smarter people than us were saying. And so when Carol Klein asked for me last year to speak at the conference, I was delighted, very much wanted to. And so when she asked again this year to help out with the conference and chair a panel, I was again delighted, not only because people are so much smarter than me, but then I get to interact with those very smart people.
Yeah, I know. That's my favorite part too. Like, let's get some people in the room who know all the things that I want to know so I can greedily pick their brains.
Yeah, who've done all the work so I don't have to and can just tell me their findings.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. So it's been a while since we talked. We talked in a past episode that was discussing Fanimal specifically, and I will link that in the show notes so people can get to that really easily. But let's go more into what you do specifically, because your work really is focused on animals and tourism and getting people connected with animals in a more ethical way when they are going on vacations rather than just sort of stopping by a roadside zoo and getting some pictures with a jaguar cub or something. So why don't you go into that, why you're doing it, and how people can be part of that kind of tourism?
Yeah. So when we started, it was 2011, and we had no idea what we were getting into. I was a volunteer coordinator at a wildlife center in Canada, and my business partner is a veterinarian still at that center. And when I left, she she had this wild idea to start maybe a business, maybe a charity, maybe something that we could consult people and really make sure they were making good choices when they were volunteering. And I said, let's make it a business because I don't want to have a board. I don't want to have a boss. And how hard can a business be? And then very, very soon after starting, we found out about B Corps, and we found out that you could, you know, be a CEO of a corporation, but have a triple bottom line that is you quantifiably benefit people, the environment, the people that your employees that you work with, the local communities. And I just thought that was a delight because that is what we wanted to do. We didn't want to get rich off of what we were doing. We just wanted to make sure that we could make a living. And so AEI was really just us stumbling along and making the best ethical choices that we could do in tourism, because there was only two of us making these choices. We didn't have a board. We didn't have a boss. We didn't have anyone but ourselves. And so I could make a proclamation of we'll never work with aquariums. And Heather was like, okay, yeah, I think that's a great idea. We shouldn't work with aquariums. Of course, there are some like nuances and ideas with aquariums and with some rescue and conservation, but that is for other groups to work with. And so what we do is partners will contact us first. So we make sure that there's no coercion. They want volunteers. They're consenting to have volunteers. They know our program. They have one. And they say, we have an animal something. We need volunteers. And then we set up the whole program. So it's everything from wild horse conservation in Mongolia to wildlife rehab in Guatemala. It's all local programs. And so we make sure that there are professional veterinarians, scientists, techs, everyone who's getting paid before we go, after we leave. And it's just volunteers doing, I think, the fun work, but it's work that veterinarians and scientists don't need to do. So you're doing feeding and cleaning and enrichment, or you're working as a citizen scientist and you're getting data points. And so the scientists can have really hygienic data. And in citizen science, it's like you're on a boat in Croatia counting dolphins and looking at dolphin behavior. So, you know, yeah. You're like, citizen science is
sign me up for that.
Yeah. And so yeah, that's what we do. I go to all the placements first to make sure that they are safe. They are ethical. We know exactly the expectation of volunteers. We know the feeling of all of it. And then I talk with all the volunteers before they go. So I can say, when I stepped off the plane, this is how it felt. When I did my first, last, middle shift, this is what happened. And it's been such an adventure and it's been so fun. The pandemic was less.
Sounds like such a hardship. I mean, going to all of these places and working with animals and then telling everybody about it. So are there any downsides to what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a downside would be, well, I'll frame it as a good thing as well. So every time I go into a community, I'm going because there are local people who are addressing a problem. And so that is amazing. There's never a time that I go somewhere that there's not solutions that are already in place and there's not people that have kind hearts and solutions that can actually help these animals. But it does mean every time I go somewhere, there is a problem, something, there is a species that's critically endangered. There is a welfare problem with domestic animals. We have a few spay and neuter programs. And so it means that the solution, which is being presented to me, is there because there is a problem. And that can be difficult. And then, yeah, I would say in a pandemic, it was a really hard 2.5-3 years because all travel stopped. And we spoke with all of our partners and said, when travel starts up, how do you feel about having volunteers? What does that look like? And a lot of them said, like, please just wait. We can't host volunteers. We can't have our families get sick. And so to just sit and wait was really, really difficult because we know that there are so many problems, and our volunteers really do help. We have quantifiable stats and measurements that show how great our volunteers are. So when we're just sitting and waiting, it is a little purposeless.
Yeah. Yeah. That must have been a really hard, what did you do during that time to keep yourself busy and keep the business afloat?
Yeah, we cut everything down. So we didn't do any advertising. We had no expenses. We cut down like our salaries. I just didn't get paid for 3 years. I took jobs on the side. One of them I worked for, I live on an island off the coast of Canada. And we have a really amazing watershed board called the Cowichan Watershed Board. And for one summer, they were looking for just help with social media. So I dressed up like a 6-foot Chinook salmon. And I interviewed scientists and stakeholders, First Nations elders, chiefs in the area, all about our two very important historical and ecologically significant rivers in the Cowichan, which was nothing to do with my job, but everything to do with my job. It's all about local partnership and conservation and animals. And yeah, dressing up, dancing like a salmon. Why not? And then with AEI specifically, we also, anytime someone just had a heart and wanted to help, we tried to get them into virtual volunteering that we just did for free. That like, if someone would email us and say, I want to help, I don't know how, we would just email all of our partners and say, what do you need right now? Do you need translation help? Do you need editing? Can we write grants for you? Can we do something? And so that was so helpful for me to feel like I was doing something. But honestly, I languished for a long time. It was really hard. I struggled with mental health, and I think a lot of us did, because we just sat around and were trying to deal with this very hard time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's go into more detail about what's going on now. You've got everything up and running again?
Yeah, yeah. So we have been so lucky that we had volunteers in the field at the end of last year. And so with AEI, we have two kind of programs. We have solo volunteer trips that we set up the program for people. And then we have group trips that I lead. And so last year we had a small trickle of people that were just champing at the bit and just wanted to get out. And that was so heartening. But, you know, with spikes in numbers and with just global things that were happening, we had a lot of people, a lot of false starts. And so now that it is February, we are having just loads of people just waking up kind of from hibernation. We kind of made the joke that we're all cicadas, that we just put ourselves in the ground for 3 years and now we're awake and we're just screaming. And we have not a huge amount, but compared to the last three, we have more and more people that are coming on our trips, which is amazing. And then we have a group trip in May to Thailand, and that is filling up too, which is so incredible. It is 1 week with wildlife rehabilitation, 1 week at an elephant sanctuary. People can do both weeks or one. And what we're seeing is a lot of people saying, I had to put my life on hold. I have always loved animals. I've always wanted to travel. And now it seems the pandemic is not over, but now it seems like we know enough about protecting ourselves and the local communities. And we'd like to, I'll be very Canadian, get boot in a boot. So it feels so good to be able to be in the field, to see what we're doing, to know that we're getting back on track.
That's great. Yeah. So tell me about these trips. If a family wants to go on a trip, is this something families can do, or is this really more for, you know, the young, ready to go explore the world people? Or do you get a lot of seniors or a lot of people who've just retired? What's your general demographic?
Yeah, I'm so excited to tell you that our demographic is super diverse. We have a lot of people that travel with their families. people who just, you know, want to get out, but want to give an experience to their kids that, you know, you'll share in the memories, you'll always have them, and then do something interesting, you know, like we have some families that are about to go to Costa Rica to volunteer at a sea turtle center. And the great thing about sea turtles is they're always on the beach, so you're always there. And how cool that it's sort of like an all-inclusive trip. We set up airport pickup, all the accommodation, all the food, travel insurance. And so you can go to an all-inclusive resort, which, you know, at some points that is the best thing to do. And people should absolutely not think I would ever judge them. Sometimes you have to look at the ocean and just drool for 7 days. But when you're done drooling, these programs are so cool because you're at the ocean and you are directly helping sea turtles. This program is so neat because they put nets in the water with marine biologists, of course, there. And we tag the sea turtles and release them right away. So it's so interesting for children to like see a sea turtle, to see what kind of like, you know, science looks like and all these data points, and then see them get released right away and swim free. Our youngest volunteer was 5. He obviously went with his mom to the wildlife center that I mentioned in Guatemala. He's always volunteering with his mom, of course, but what a neat gift to give your child that you, no matter your age, can help these animals, and you can, for the rest of your life, just understand your part in this world and how it can be just like a little more kind, a little more active as well. But then our eldest volunteers were in their 80s, and they went to Nepal to volunteer with dogs. They live on opposite ends of America, opposite coasts. And every year they meet up in a different country and volunteer, which I think is so cool. And they always wanted to go to Nepal. And the programs that we have, you live with a family. And so the family will show you around the Kathmandu Valley and can understand the culture more while helping with these dogs and doing really important work. And so it's all groups of people. We're seeing a lot of, I think so interestingly, a lot of women in their 50s who their kids have just left to go to university, to move out, to, you know, to do whatever. And these women sort of breathe out and go, okay, kids are safe. Now, what do I want? What have I always wanted? And, you know, so many of us love animals. And so many of us, when we were younger, had little farm sets or, you know, horses to play with or things like that. And so you think back before you were raising kids, before you had this career, and you say, what did I like? And it almost always goes back to animals. And so we have these women that, you know, email us and say, well, I don't have any background, but like, I've always loved animals. Is this something I can do? And I always tell people, if I can help animals, anyone can, because I have no background. I have no business doing it.
That's so great. It does seem like such a range of experiences people can have as well, no matter, you know, what kind of animal they're interested in. Or do you ever have anyone who just sort of goes, just send me wherever, you know, I'm needed the most, or do they usually have a specific animal they're excited about helping?
It's a good mixture. What we do is I email, of course, but I also interview all the volunteers. And there are times that people say, just send me everywhere. But then sitting and talking with them, I can sort of get a sense of, because I've been to all the places, what would make sense for them, what would really, you know, set their heart on fire, where they would get, you know, the kind of cultural experience they're looking for, the certain animals. We have some people that say, send me anywhere, but I love horses. Like, oh, okay. Well, we have a horse sanctuary and rescue in Spain. Do you think maybe that would be something you're interested in? Oh my gosh, that would be a dream. Like, perfect. Then like the place that you will have the most passion, and the place that you will feel most like you, is the place that needs your help the most.
And are most of your clients Westerners, Americans, Canadians? going abroad to other places, maybe where there isn't as much English speaking, or do you get people from all over the world going other places, like people from Asia coming over to the US?
So we don't have any programs on Turtle Island at the moment. Most programs in the US and Canada are pretty solid with volunteer coordinators and with setting up housing and things like that. What we've found is it is places that are off of Turtle Island that are needing just a bit more help, that need kind of me as their international volunteer coordinator and liaison and logistics czar. So most of our clients are from Turtle Island and Europe and the UK, but we have loads from Australia. We have, the last time we had lots of volunteers, we had some from South America and from Northern Africa. So it's pretty exciting when we get, any application is exciting because I get to talk about travel and animals and helping, but it's really exciting when people kind of come from away and are still looking to do that type of travel.
You know, I'm looking forward to connecting with you at some point in the future for my own ecotourism experience, because, well, I have little kids right now, 3 and 6, and it feels so far away. You know, getting to do something like this is really a dream for so many people. Do you think that, I mean, is it affordable for most people, though? It feels like it's one of those things that only people with a lot of extra time and a lot of extra money can do.
Yeah, it's an investment for sure. Volunteering anywhere, there needs to be a cost, because everything that you consume has a cost. So when we set up our programs, you know, airport pickup, Wi-Fi, electricity, potable water, training, supervision, everything has a price to it. And it should, because we shouldn't be taking from the local community, and we shouldn't be asking the local community to pay for things that we consume. And so there is a cost. We do help with fundraising if people need it. We give people lots of ideas and lots of pictures, and I write loads of letters to companies saying, yes, this person actually is volunteering and please sponsor them. But the price is really equivalent to traveling anywhere, going on a cruise or going to a hotel for a week at a beach resort or things like that. There are some of the programs are more expensive. Thinking about our Australia programs as a higher cost of living, but then somewhere like Guatemala or Costa Rica, it is a bit smaller. And I think it's frustrating to live in capitalism, because I would love to offer these programs for free, but it is an impossibility. So what I can honestly tell people is that I'm not making a lot of money off of it. I can honestly tell you that. But I can also honestly say that the money that goes towards these trips goes towards not only the things you're consuming, but also the things that you believe in. In the first 10 years of AEI, we were able to give away $1 million just in pure donations for these conservation and animal welfare programs. And that feels so good, because while it's dispersed throughout the world in all of our placements, all of that is going towards things that we think are so important. And so, yes, you can go to a beach in Croatia and have a beautiful time, or you can go to a beach in Croatia, spend, you know, maybe a little bit more money, or maybe it's just more logistics to get to where our dolphin program is. But then you know that all of the money that you are spending is going towards a conservation of dolphins. And you know that from your airport pickup to the restaurants that you're eating at, everyone is helping animals and everyone's supporting our programs. And so while it is an investment, I think it's an investment that all of us really want to get behind.
Well said. Yeah. See, that just makes me more excited. I can't wait. So let's talk about the conference a little bit. Yeah. What are you most excited about for this conference?
Oh my gosh, this is kind of a cop out, but I am so excited for the panel that I'm chairing because I've always been like a naturally curious person. I've always been that person that has asked like, what is this? And then when Google was around, well, is still around, when it became on my phone, I'll say, I'm just Googling stuff all the time. Do I want to go back to school and put years into something? Not really. I want someone to tell me something very smart. So I'm excited to sit at this panel and just be able to really take in and absorb what people are talking about. And, you know, that's like the whole conference. One of the first things on my panel is they're talking about killer whales and whale watching regulations. And that's something that happens right outside my door. So I would really like to know more about that. It's something that is a massive kind of black box in my head. I don't know a lot about it, but I'm excited for that specific talk and other specific talks. But then the last conference, I didn't know what I didn't know, and I still don't. And so I'm excited to have someone show me all the things I don't know so I can then learn about it.
Yes, the surprise.
Yeah.
I love it when I sit down to a conference and go, okay, I have no idea what I'm going to be learning here, but it'll probably be interesting. And then just getting your mind blown by something, you know, there's always going to be something that you're like, oh, this looks like a okay talk. I guess I'll sit here and drink my tea. And then it's just like rocks your world and changes everything.
Yeah.
And when that happens, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Your panel is on the first day and it's Rain Billings, Killer Whales Up Close, and then Evelyn Baptistella, Non-Human and Human Animals in Tourism, and Altamush Saeed, Animal Edutourism Behind Bars, The Dystopian Future. A very wide range of topics. So I feel like we're going to get a lot from those. And actually, I'm going to be interviewing both Evelyn and Altamush for this mini series. So I get to talk to them a little bit ahead of time too, which I'm excited about.
Oh, amazing.
Some pretty interesting ones here. I'm really excited. In the panel that I'm chairing, there is one called Restoring Relationships of Respect with Eagle Relatives. And that one is Bobby Chu Bigby, Restoring Relationships of Respect with Eagle Relatives. And that one looks really interesting to me. I'm really excited for that one too.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about the EVAC conference is the intersectionality of it. It's not just a bunch of academics that have the same color of skin as me, that are from the same area. It's people from all over the world that have all these different mm-hmm. perspectives that just makes this really rich tapestry that has all these different ways of knowing that to understand the world more, we just have to weave everything together. And I think especially now when we're in the middle of Truth and Reconciliation and the Land Back movement, to be able to give space to First Nations scientists and elders and leaders, and to be like, to listen to what they have to say, what they've been saying for so long. I think it's so special for this conference to not only give space, but give a lot of space for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. One of the things I love about this podcast is it is so global. I get to talk to people from all over the world. And that's one of my favorite things about this conference as well, is because it is people from all over the world. It's not just a bunch of, you know, white middle-aged people talking about how we can help the rest of the world, which I think we see less and less of that these days. But it is really nice when a conference is just so global.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so profoundly interesting to hear people that are just different from me. And that's one of the things that I love about my job that is so beautifully mirrored in the EVAC conference, that it is me just being quiet for a long time and having people that have answers and have knowledge and have had it for a long time just be able to explain what's going on. Thinking about the red flags that are raised, that have been raised for a while, and the responsibility to community and to animals, I think it's just so interesting that we're able to bring all these people together and really everyone listen to everyone else.
Okay. Well, so I know we asked these questions, but sometimes the answers change, and I might ask them slightly differently this time, but if there was a book that you could gift to all of the listeners, and it doesn't have to be related to this, it could be anything, but if there was a book that you could gift, what would that book be?
Oh my gosh. I can't remember what I said last time, so maybe it's the same book, but I would gift Wintering by Catherine May to everyone in the world. It is a beautiful book. She is a poet among poets. And the whole gist of the book is that the world has rhythms and seasons, and that there's nowhere that has growth forever that is sustainable. And so there are real ecological winters that happen, seasons, and then there's winters that are emotional, and we must not succumb. Thinking about my mental health in the pandemic, I succumbed to that winter, but the slowing down, the coziness, the not so focused on progress and progression, and the focusing on resting and healing is deeply important for the trees that I'm looking at right now. And it's deeply important for our bodies. And it was my favorite book in 2020. And it is one of the best books I ever read for its gentleness and its just loving kindness to everything in the world, including humans, which sometimes feels like we don't give out enough of.
That sounds really like a lovely read. I feel like that sounds like one I should get on Audible and read in the car on a long trip.
Yeah, I think that would be beautiful to just be surrounded by this like very loving message. And especially right now in February when like the light is coming back and we kind of like want to go out and do more, but our bodies are like, what? No, it's so cold. What? It's a lovely reminder to like, not yet. Some flowers are coming up, some buds are happening, but you know, be gentle and listen to your body, not what capitalism and patriarchy and everything in between are telling you.
All right. So again, I asked this question before, but let's change it just slightly. Is there an experience you would like to have with animals, a connection that you would like to make that you have not had before?
Wow.
I know. Sorry. I just popped this one on you. No preparation.
An experience that makes it sound like the way that I'm pausing, it makes it sound that I've done everything in the whole world. You know, this is so strange. I have never seen a whale shark. And I have been to 5 different places to do conservation work where I was like guaranteed to see whale sharks. And every time, you know, it was bad weather, or 3 of the times there were orcas in the area. Mm. And this was in the Middle East. This was in Sri Lanka, Costa Rica. And I live like I can look at the ocean from my house, and that is where orcas live. So 3 times I was like, I have gone around the world to see orcas that are in my backyard, which is what a privilege. I am complaining, but also not complaining. So I would not necessarily swim or interact or anything exploitative, of course, but I would love to see something that big. Yeah. I've been so lucky that I was able to kayak the North Island of Vancouver Island, and we kayaked with orcas going past us and with minke whales and humpback whales, and they are mahoosive. They're so big. I would love to experience more big animals like that in in an environment that, of course, is consensual and they can swim away, and I'm not trying to poke at them or anything like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Seeing an animal that massive, I can imagine, would just be a life-changing experience.
Yeah. Yeah, you just feel so small. And also, like, when it's an orca, you're just very aware that you are made of meat and they eat meat. And yeah, it's, yeah, beautiful to get that perspective of like, yeah, my problems are real and sad and okay, but then they are also like so unique to just me. It's not the whole world. There's also like really cool perspective that comes from seeing such big things.
Yeah, that would be amazing. So, Nora, what is the deal with animals?
Oh my gosh. The deal with animals is they always have something more to teach us. If it is about like getting perspective, if it's about compassion and grief, where we see animals grieving their dead, if we see joy, like a dog playing with a ball, if we just learn about like a new animal and go, what in the world is an anglerfish? Are you kidding me? A Yeti crab? It is, I think if we look around, and if we include humans in this, there's always more to learn. There's always more to be curious about. And there's always more to just be delighted by. And I think that's the deal with animals.
Thank you so much for joining me today. And it was really great talking with you again. Always the best laugh. And and I look forward to seeing you at the conference in just a few days once this gets published.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Marika. It's always so fun talking to you. And it's always fun to have my brain be expanded just a little bit more by your questions.
That was Nora Livingstone of Animal Experience International and chair for panel one of the upcoming conference, Emerging Voices for Animals and Tourism, starting on March 8th. If you haven't yet registered, there's still time. Go to animalsandtourism.com. And to learn more about Animal Experience International, go to animalexperienceinternational.com. If you enjoyed this show and have any questions or comments about this episode or about the podcast in general, go to thedealwithanimals.com and leave me a message. This is also a great place to go if you're interested in being a guest or have an idea for a series or episode. And don't forget to follow and review wherever you listen to your podcast, as it helps us become more visible to other listeners. I'm your host, Marika Bell. I'd like to thank Kai Stranskoff for the theme music and Natasha Matsark for help with editing. You can see links to guest book recommendations, as well as their websites and affiliated organizations, in the show notes and at thedealwithanimals.com. Thank you for joining me as we try to answer the question, what's the deal with animals? So, what do you think is the deal with animals? The Deal with Animals is part of the iROAR Animal Podcast Network.